This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
Good morning, everyone. This is Gloria Spratley Brown, and I will serve as your facilitator this morning for the webinar reviewing the 2016-17 Perkins funding opportunities. If you'd like to access the PowerPoint presentation as well as our application, as you look at slide 2 on the screen, you can pull down the secondary, post-secondary applications. As you look at slide 3, if you're on the call, you would have already received this information, which is our 800 number to access the webinar today and the conference code. On behalf of our Chancellor, Chancellor Rod Duckworth, again, I want to thank you all for participating in the call today. We will have several presenters today going over the required information for the submission of your Perkins application. As we look at slide 5, to minimize the background noise, please mute your phones. You may mute your phone by pressing star 6 to mute the phone. We will facilitate questions toward the end of each presentation, so you can unmute your phone by pressing star 6. At this time, if everyone will please press star 6 to mute your phone. Brief agenda is shown here on slide 6. You'll have Dr. Amy I'll be presenting regarding Perkins accountability, and then Marcy Seg will come to the end and wrap it up and give you some information about our online survey. I will go over all of the application requirements and submission, spend some time talking with you about the narrative section of the budget, and facilitating any questions you may have regarding the submission process. We hope today our goal is to provide you with all of the programmatic information, reporting information, and all of the requirements necessary so that you can submit your application. Many of the individuals on the call today are familiar with this application process. The good news, we have not changed anything. We are coasting into perhaps a reauthorization of Perkins that would probably come in the next year or so. So it is our desire to keep things as much as possible the same until the federal government opt to reauthorize, and I'm sure at that time we will all be introduced to some possible changes. With that said, on slide 8, you will see the various funding opportunities that are available through the Carl V. Perkins funding source. As resource documents, as I go through the presentation today, I will be looking at, number one, the PowerPoint slide for the webinar. I'll also be referencing the post-secondary request for application, as well as the secondary request for application. I will not spend a lot of time on the DJJ, but if there are any questions specific to that application, I will be more than happy to answer those questions. But in regards to the DJJ application, competitive application, I think I have one or two slides in the presentation that will discuss those as well. The overview. We're all familiar with the purpose of Carl V. Perkins. And again, this is a supplemental program to help add some additional funding beyond what you may receive from your private donations and or from your state-funded funds received. So we know that in comparison to the total operation of your vocational or career technical ed programs, this is not a huge component of your program. However, we know that the Carl D. Perkins dollars are spent to enhance what you're already doing. So we hope to use the money to support career technical ed at both secondary and post-secondary levels for those students who elect to participate in career and technical education. On slide 11, we gave provided you with the general basic estimate of the funds that we are anticipating for the 16-17 year. And on slide 12, we further kind of delineate how those funds will be spent in the upcoming year. More specifically, how the secondary, post-secondary, and reserve funds are spent. As we talk about the reserve funds under the law, we have at a state discretion authorization to hold back 10% of the aid to district set aside to support specific projects as it relates to adversely disadvantaged populations. It could be from high concentration of CTE students. It could be a specific targeted need for the state. Typically, we've used our reserve funds to support our developmental research programs, providing them with career and technical ed services. We've used our reserve to support our Florida School for the Deaf and Blind. We've also used our reserve funds to support our rural and sparsely populated areas, again, to further enhance their funds to offer career and technical ed services within their areas. We always try to share with you how our allocations are derived. And on slide 13, it shares how the secondary allocation process. Again, this is script in law. We simply go out to the website as listed there on bullet one, and we provide to you the data as referenced in the U.S. Census. And we drop it in a formula, and your county receives its proportionate share based on the total. And as you know, that amount can change and does change and will change year to year based on the census data we receive. On the post-secondary side, it's a little bit more, Florida received the authorization to use an alternate formula. And our alternate formula was derived by pooling together a group of our secondary, our post-secondary deans and directors from around the state. And it was derived from this group of individuals determining common indicators, common data elements that we can identify economically disadvantaged individuals. And based on that, on slide 15 yields the list. So we pull data 2 years back because the data must be submitted and certified, so it's always 2 years back, but we pull the data that's been certified and submitted. We drop the data elements into an allocation formula. You receive your proportionate share based on the total. And again, that information would change and will change from year to year based on the data elements listed on slide 15. At this time, I'm going to refer to the grant application. Looking at the grant application, looking at page 1 of the grant application, it provides you with the appropriate funding authority, the amount for both secondary application and post-secondary. And we always leave this caveat at the bottom. As you are aware, we have not received our official federal award notification from the U.S. Department of Education. So, with that said, this application provides the best estimate we could offer at this time. We always leave that caveat that in the event that the U.S. Department of Education were to change our allocation, total allocation amount to the state, we will then must go in and modify those allocations for the local providers appropriately. Most importantly, the due date. The due date is on or before May 20th, and the reason it's on or before, Carl D. Perkins is an entitled program, which means, as script in law, only secondary districts, post-secondary districts and colleges authorized by the state of Florida to be post-secondary providers are eligible. Those are the only providers who are eligible to apply. Therefore, it is deemed an entitled program. May 20th is the preferred due date. You get your information into us by May 20th, we will immediately start working your application. As you know, we process close to 400 applications in less than 45 to 60 days. First in, first out. If you choose to turn it in after May 20th, that's okay. But the ultimate due date, as stated, is June 30th. And the reason for that, because it is a federal program, if your agency wished to have a July 1 start date, program date, fiscal date, we must have that application in this office on or before June 30th. If we were to receive your application on July 17th, then your start date, program date, and fiscal date will be July 17th. Therefore, any expenditures or costs that you wish to charge to this program, you would not be able to charge anything from July 1 to July 16th to this program. So it's very important that you get your application in by the preferred due date of May 20th, and the final due date of June 30th. The application also provides to you your program manager. We have set the program managers up by county and area. They are experienced program managers with handling this particular fund source. If you have any questions, we prefer that you call them now. You ask those questions now. Incorporate those recommended changes and updates prior to the submission of your application. Trust me when I say it will really speed up the process and it will allow you to quickly be in the first in, first out process. I'll now flip back to the webinar PowerPoint and go over a few slides here, and then we're going to get into the actual submission of the narrative. On slide 17 of the webinar PowerPoint presentation, we strongly encourage you to pull down the correct application that you are submitting and to read it. Oftentimes, because you all are so familiar with this program, we tend to pull up what we did last time and not make the necessary changes in the new year. That will delay your award notification. That will delay the process here in Tallahassee when the program managers are reviewing your application. Typically, there are minor changes, but I will say to you, we have a few changes in the application, so you must read the new application in its entirety. The checklist system works wonderfully. We incorporated that some years ago, and I can tell you, if you organized your submission based on that review checklist, you will find that it will really help out here in Tallahassee, and we're able to really review it really quickly. We ask you next to please save your narrative information, because during the negotiation process, the program manager will be contacting you, asking you to update, modify, and change narrative statements, perhaps, as well as budget statements, and we will ask you to email us an updated version. So please save your application so that when you get the calls from the Tallahassee program managers, you can quickly go in there and make your modifications. What I found that our program managers really, really do very well, they usually send you an email. And in that email, they document all of the recommended modifications and or questions that they need further clarification on. Using your saved document with the outline of the additional information, you should be able to quickly and expeditiously get that back to us. So I'll talk a little bit about each of the narrative sections at this time. If I may, I'm going to kind of regress a little bit here, and I am going to look at the request for application. And the one in particular I'm looking at is post-secondary, but the information is the same in the secondary application. And I'm looking at the information regarding assurances. And again, your agency head will submit the assurances. If you have not had a change in agency head from your last application submission to this year, you're good. Each time you have a president or a superintendent change, you are required to submit a new assurance. Under the risk analysis, good news there. If you have not had a change in agency head for our local education agencies, our districts and colleges, you're good. That signature that your agency had provided to us covers all of your applications submitted here. But if you're one of our non-governmental agencies, you will be required to submit. And again, based on law, we should not have any of those, because the only eligible providers are districts and our colleges. We reviewed the equipment information. That information has not changed from our last program year. Our indirect cost rates and information has not changed from our last submission. Most importantly, be reminded of your record and retention. As stated by Florida and federal government, make sure you maintain your records for the timeline of 5 years. Number 9, in the post-secondary application, the information is the same. In the secondary information, in request for application, maybe a different page number, but the information is the same. The amendment procedure. Just be mindful that the application you submit to us in your original submission is what we're going to hold you to. If you opt to change anything in that original grant submission, be aware of our amendment process. It is found in our green book. If you have any questions whether to submit an amendment or not, contact your program manager, and they will be able to explain to you when an amendment is necessary. As you are aware, we have a full operating compliance team that will be monitoring all of our federal programs. The compliance team creates a risk assessment each year. From that risk assessment, they determine which of our providers they will visit from an on-site standpoint. If you'd like to know what are the indicators identified in that risk matrix, you can find that on our website if you access our Quality Assurance Policy Procedure Protocol document, and the link is provided. So we are in the process right now of reviewing that. All of our on-site providers are notified well in advance. We have an outstanding approach to hosting webinars to give you information as to what to expect. Even further, we post each and every on-site review that we complete. They're posted out on our website, so you can go out and take a look at prior year evaluations or reviews, as well as call some of your colleagues, and they will be able to explain to you how this process is very easy to follow, and we do it from a team approach. And it's definitely not an I got you approach. It's actually trying to review your process, learn from what you're doing, sharing best practices as well with some of our other providers to make sure that we all are adhering to the federal requirements. So let's talk about the different sections, the narrative sections within the application. From the onset of Perkins 4, each of our providers had to submit a 5-year plan. And with that 5-year plan, you provided us with narrative detail as to how your agency would implement the required components of Carl V. Perkins. Subsequently, we have provided an easy update approach all years after the 5-year plan. So 5-year plan was about 208. We're in 2016, so you can imagine for 5 years, I think it led into the 12-13 year. So we've been doing some updates and extensions beyond the original federal timeline. Again, we are anticipating sometime soon, next year or so, that we will see a Perkins 5, which we will start that process all over again by creating those 5-year plans as required under Perkins 5. I know this on my page 14 from the post-secondary, one of the things you find that many people do not follow is the instructions on how to set their margins and how many applications to submit to us. We really do need that one original, and I will recommend that you have your agency head sign it perhaps in blue ink. We do not accept electronic signatures. They must be ink signatures. Blue ink allows the intake team clearly to delineate a copy from an original. We have some very, very fine print black pens that really, really look like a copy, and that will delay the process as well. The three identical copies are necessary, because your application kind of once it arrives here, it goes, we kind of split it up and it goes three different places. So we want to make sure that we're all looking at your application at the same time. So when all the parts and pieces are approved and come back to the program manager, we can quickly move forward with the issuance of the award notification. So those three copies are important. If we don't get the three copies, then guess what happens? It stops. Somebody has to take the time to go make the copy before we can move forward. So all of these little tips that I'm offering you, trust me, over my years of doing this, it really helps to expedite the process and keep your application moving through the review process. On the slide, I'm still on slide 19, it kind of lists for you all of the parts and pieces, the different areas. I cannot identify any particular area that we'd like to expound on. I will be expounding on the budget narrative section. Amy Alvey will do an outstanding job of talking with you about programs of study. Also, if, as you are aware, we will be hosting a separate webinar specifically on programs of study. If I can say of any area that caused us some hiccups last year and delayed the process was this area. It was because of the specifications and the expectations of answering the questions as outlined in the programs of study section. So you will find that if we write the question, we expect a clear response to the question. And I think that kind of delayed us quite a bit last year, so we thought it was worthy of its own separate webinar to help expound and explain to you the importance of this section. This is a requirement under Carl D. Perkins. You cannot get an award notification if you do not have a solid program of study. So Amy Alvey and team, they've done an awesome job of creating some tools and a webinar to help us in this area. On slide 20, I think this is general information. The local performance accountability information and improvement plan, we have a solid system in place, as you are aware, under separate cover. You will get instructions on how to access our division web-based system. You will get an opportunity to go into that system and then log in your responses regarding that. In the narrative section, as you're responding to those 9 required components, we have an excellent tool there that will expand as you would like to write in your narrative responses. Again, if you have no plan changes as you move into the new program year, you will simply list that as well. We're doing double duty here. We have responding to our questions as well as presenting the information. On slide 21, we talked about reserve funds, and this is one of those reserve categories that I mentioned in the opening, that we set aside funds to support our rural and sparsely populated areas. The requirement specifically in that, it is a secondary, post-secondary allocation that the two agencies will come together and decide how they would like to share in the funds and provide adequate documentation to support that. We only ask that if you choose to use the rural funds that you focus on one of our priority areas. We try to make the prior areas an all-inclusive kind of approach that even if it's not one of the distance learning information technology, that we're sure between the Regional Workforce Board and or student or industry certification area that you can pretty much do any of the programs and occupations that your district and or college deem important. So remember to include your abstract, your letters of agreement. One of the things I would like to add to this is as a district when you're submitting this, your secondary application and this rule of sparsely pop application kind of go hand in glove. So as an eligible applicant for the rule of sparsely pop, you must have submitted a solid secondary application. So when we receive these, we kind of group them together and we review them together. So if you're having issues, delays on the secondary application side, you're going to have issues and delays in the rule and sparsely populated category as well, because they work hand in glove. On the DJJ competitive grant, this is the only competitive area that we offer under Carl D. Perkins, and again, it's under the discretionary category, so we as a state get to identify our areas of interest and concern. So with that, we've offered this for a number of years. The only eligible provider are our districts. We've tried to clean up the application this year in regards to the number of applications we will fund per district. Your district may submit multiple, but we will only fund one project. We only have a limited dollar amount, and we really try to ensure that we offer the funds in as many districts around the state. So at one point we didn't have that limitation, but I will say that once we incorporated the limitation, it really afforded many districts to participate in this process. Page 23 gives an outline of the narrative components within this document, the DJJ document. It is competitive. One of the things we ask and try and get each year are volunteers. We do need reviewers to help us select the best applicants in this category. I always encourage, if we have some new deans, directors in the area, this is a great way to take a look at what other districts are doing, what other program offerings are out there. Even teachers, we encourage teachers who offer instruction in this area. So we've already sent out our solicitation for reviewers. It's also located on our website. They are volunteers. We do not have any compensation for those, but I can assure you it's an awesome learning experience, and we do have people that just enjoy doing this, and they oftentimes contact us to participate. We try and select new people each year so that we can shake it up and make sure we get some different viewpoints as we're reviewing the application. So closer to May, we may be reaching out to some of you if we are in need of additional reviewers. On page 25, it just talks about the budget. The conversation regarding the budget narrative really covers all of our grant submissions. I will say, along with the narrative, because we do want to know what you're doing in regards to addressing the requirements and those things that are permissive, are permissible, we really need solid budget forms. If I can say the area of weakness that delayed the application the most would be the budget section, not because of allocableness of the items you are requesting. It is more in the narrative section and you expounding on the who, what, why, and how many of what kind. It is very important that from a program manager standpoint here in Tallahassee, we do not, or many of our program managers do not get to touch and feel your programs. They really live vicariously through the words you put on the paper. So as you are writing the narrative of those items that you are proposing to purchase, it is through those words that they can feel and touch your program. So if you are buying a particular item or buying supplies or contracting services out to providers to offer and teach and train and offer professional development, it is important that you provide detailed narrative explaining what you are proposing to do. I could probably do an individual webinar just on how to write your budget. What we've tried to do in each of the applications is provide you a good sample. If you follow the sample that we've provided, I think you will be pretty safe in at least giving us the minimal requirements. We welcome when you can quantify what you're doing. When it's regarding to travel, if you can tell us how many and where you're going, many times you may not know where the national conference or state conference, the city per se, that the conference is to be held, but you will know I'm going to the Florida FACTE conference. How many teachers are you sending? How many administrators are you sending? Those are the kinds of details that really will help us as we are moving through the review process. An area regarding contract services. Many times you contract professional development of our other activities out. Attaching that contract agreement is critical. When you look at the function object codes that you're using, that will indicate to us whether it's a salary employee employed at your institution or whether you are contracting out the service. It is the responsibility of the awarding agency to approve your contracts, to make sure that you, when you write your contracts and you have the contract to sign, that we're getting a fair value for what you're contracting. We want to make sure that you're not paying more than fair market value for a particular product at the local level. And I say this in a broad brush general comment, but trust me when I say to you, we've seen some very interesting arrangements when those contracts get here to Tallahassee. Keep in mind the internal controls, the arm length relationships. Don't contract with your family members. There are a lot of things that, as you look at that contract service agreement document that we have on our website, keep that in mind, because we will research who you're contracting with, and many times we've been surprised as to some of the relationships. So we do look at those. Again, the comments that I'm making regarding the budget are general, and they're broad brush between all of our funding. So make sure that you're using the appropriate function codes for our districts and object codes for districts and colleges. And trust me when I say we have right there beside us the good old red book, and then we use the community college accounting document to make sure that that information is accurate and correct. And we're all familiar with the administrative costs. For this particular federal program, it is capped at 5%, which includes admin. So with a combination of admin and indirect, the cap is 5%. As you know, our department, our grants management department, would have each of your negotiated rates on file, so they know, they'll go through and they calculate that information. Slide 28 just further expounds on the contract service agreement, and we give you a link that you may go to look at the state of Florida's guide as well as our grants management guide regarding contract service agreements. We are all a year into the uniform grants guidance document. Woo-hoo! That was an interesting piece that we all had to learn, but I feel that the transition went very smoothly. Nothing major creeped up from our implementation of the Uniform Grants Guidance document. I'll just caution you to, those are your new administrative guides in regards to the federal program. Slide 30, again, talk about the risk analysis that we mentioned already and the requirements there. Equipment, as we are familiar with the equipment form and using the uniform guidance document when doing equipment. And I will say that this particular area, there are a lot of references to look at. So depending on the type of equipment you're purchasing, the price, etc., please pay attention to these references. Submission items, again, make sure your agency head or its designee sign the DOE 100A form. If your agency head authorizes someone else to sign on their behalf, make sure you include the authorization letter so that we will not have to come back and ask for that. Because as you know, our intake team verifies the signature as it relates to your college president and or superintendent. Again, this particular section is emphasizing the DJJ competitive grant specifically, but I will add that all of our Perkins submissions follow this same format. And the competitive grant is due May 20th. Now, on a competitive grant, we do not get an opportunity to change the due date. If you are submitting under the competitive DJJ, it is a hard, fast May 20th by 5 o'clock deadline. Anything outside of that will not be eligible to be a part of the reviewer process. For the DJJ applications, because we have multiple reviewers reviewing the grant, we require 3 identical copies, 1 original, and 3 identical copies. And then I see 7. So we have 1 grant application from the agency head and 3, really 7. The correct answer is 7. Is it? Hope we're not having a fire alarm. We have a little sound coming in right now. We want to make sure that we're okay here. All right. Tashi, super guy, fix it. Thank you, Tashi. So the answer here on this particular slide, it's 7 copies and 1 original. And the reason we need the 7 copies, we have to send a copy of your application to each reviewer. And we do not want to make the mistake of copying them ourselves. And you heard of the old copy paper jam situation, and your reviewer missed critical information because we made a copy error. So we put the responsibility on you to send us the information. So now what we're going to do is have Tashi stand there and hold it just so it won't make that sound. So we're going to get that sound taken care of. And you must submit it to the address listed here on page 34. At this time, I am going to transition over to my colleague, Amy, and then we're going to come back and we'll wrap it up with a few more highlights, and then we're going to open up for questions and answers.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I want to take some time here to talk about the accountability requirements for the Perkins grant. As you all are, I'm sure, aware, we are required under the Perkins grant to develop value reliable measures for each core indicator performance. That includes us as a state, as well as you as local. And this is, of course, for our secondary and post-secondary entities. On the next slide, these are the secondary performance measures. You can see we look at academic attainment in reading and academic attainment in math for secondary, as well as several other measures, technical skill attainment, completion, graduation rate, placement, and non-chat participation and completion. For post-secondary college credit, we look at many similar measures with the exception of the academic attainment measures. So again, we're looking at technical skill attainment, completion, retention, placement, and non-chat participation and completion. The measures are the same for our post-secondary clock hour entities. Now, I want to give you a little bit of information on how we set these local targets. I noticed on the system that there was a question about a waffle, and hopefully I'll get to your question here. What's called the Local Agreed Upon Performance Level System, or LAPL system, and it allows you to do the following. Accept your recommended targets, enter your required narrative, develop program improvement plan if necessary, and I will talk about that in a little more detail in a few slides, and download and sign an attestation letter form on your agency letterhead. Now, local education agencies that choose to negotiate a target, you cannot do that on the LAPL system. You have to contact your grant manager directly and ask him or her about the process. Now, we are currently in the process of negotiating our target. As soon as we get that complete, we will get that information out to you under separate cover. I just want to give you a little background what happened. We have to propose our targets to the Fed, and they let us know whether or not they accept them or want us to amend those. We're in that process right now. We're waiting to hear back from them. As soon as we do, we are ready to have a LAPL system go live, and we will send out, again, information under separate cover on how to access that, how to use it, and again, you can ask us questions if once you get to it. You have any problems with it. So please be on the lookout for that. We will let you know as soon as possible. We know that you're looking for that. We understand that. And that's why we are trying to work with the Fed to get back with us as soon as possible. If you have any information on how the targets are set or requesting a performance negotiation, you can go to our implementation guide, which is on slide 42. And that also, that implementation guide includes a wealth of information besides information on our performance targets in the LAPL system. Okay, on slide 43, I want to talk about the program improvement plan. We are required under the Perkins Law to develop program improvement plans. We as a state should be failed to meet our target, and of course you as a local entity are required to complete program improvement plans. Now, these are required if you do not meet at least 90% of your agreed-upon performance level. We have been working with several agencies over the past 2 years who have not met their target or come within 90% of their target for 3 consecutive years. We will continue to do that. That is part of the law. We are required to do that. So if you are selected in that process, we will notify you ahead of time. Hopefully we'll get to talk with you at the faculty conference, and then we'll move forward from there. So again, if you are selected, you'll receive separate notifications for that as well. You are encouraged in developing your local improvement plan to use your local level data report when you're developing your plans. Now, these can be found on your SharePoint site. I do not believe they are available yet. I do know that some agencies that attended this week's CPE data training here in Leon County did receive theirs in hard copy, and we are in the midst of putting them together so you can get them ASAP. And as well, that typically, so get posted on your SharePoint site, and additionally, we send it out, and we send out that LAPL memo. We also send attached your local level data report with that. And it will include information on your measures by program, measures by school and program, as well as trends over time. This is very helpful information, so we are encouraging you to take a look at it when you develop your program improvement plans and see where you may have gaps and use that as backup. Also, when developing program improvement plans, it's important to include review data and highlight major challenges include strategies that will help you address these specific challenges, and describe how you evaluate your program improvement plan goals. These are very integral. If you want some samples on how to write up a PIP, you can, again, review that implementation guide that you have the link for on slide 42. If you're interested, you can go back and take a look at that. Or, again, if you'd like to call me, I can certainly help you with that as well. Technical scale of payment is another piece that comes falls into the Perkins Grant. The 2016-17 Perkins Technical Skill Attainment Inventory will be posted soon. The web address is up there. And the following categories of assessment can be found in the inventory. So we're looking for federal and state regulatory agency assessments, industry developed assessments, such as those from ASE or and we're looking for industry developed assessments from entities such as NATEC or proprietary company developed assessments, such as those from Microsoft or Cisco, or third party developed assessments, such as NACI, ASC, GrainBench, etc. That will be posted shortly. We do post one for secondary, post secondary clock hour, and post secondary college credit. And again, those are used strictly in determining your performance for the technical skill attainment measure. I know that Gloria alluded earlier to our program study webinar. We do apologize for having to cancel that last week unexpectedly. Okay. We do apologize for having to cancel that unexpectedly last week. We do have it rescheduled for the morning of May 2nd. If you did not receive that notification from Chancellor Duckworth, please contact me. The information includes how you can register for the webinar. And we did make a few changes based on your feedback from last year, so I highly encourage you to attend. And again, if you have any questions about registering for it or how to get that information, please let me know. At this time, I will pass it back over to Gloria Spradley Brown.
Thank you so much, Amy. We're sorry about that. We did catch the comment that it was difficult hearing Amy, but hopefully you were able to keep up with us in regards to the PowerPoint presentation. And we are always available through phone calls directly to Amy or myself or any of the program managers that we may assist you as needed. On slides 49 and 50, we just wanted to add some items from our compliance team. As I mentioned earlier in the process, we do have a full operating compliance team that work with our local providers, but we just wanted to highlight some of best practices that they've observed as they've gone out over the last few years. Again, we wanted to emphasize some of the creative stuff that's going on in regards to technology and the really, really innovative and instruction practices, and as we all know, the importance of business and industry as we continue to include them in that process of ensuring that the instructions that we're offering is relevant to the real life, real workplace. On the reverse side, there are some things you've noticed that we cautioned our providers to take a second glance at. And the big piece is data quality. As you all are aware, Tara McLarnon and staff, they do an awesome job with offering technical assistance regarding data quality. We're also familiar with many of our programs have embarked on changing their data collection systems, supporting through the state appropriation funding and going through that whole process. We know that data quality is important. As a requirement under inventory, under the UGG, as well as the federal regulations, we're finding problems regarding the equipment inventory and appropriately identifying and tagging those items that are purchased with federal dollars. So our staff according to Tashi and the team, they've had to spend a lot of time with helping our programs correct that process, as well as inclusion of our advisory groups. We mentioned that you're doing some great things with your business partners, but as you know, you've got to keep them included in the planning and the advisory component of what we do. As I lead to wrapping up my presentation, I'd like to just reference a couple of tools, and then we're going to take the phone off of mute and open up for audio questions. Please reference the Perkins Resource Guide. It is very, very good. It gives you a step-by-step instruction, especially if we have some new directors out there. It may look overwhelming at first, but if you really compare that guide to the application, it will provide you with the step-by-step process, as well as the quality assurance document and the uniform grants guidance document, and our agency green book, which is our governing document for the implementation of our federal program, and the terms, conditions, and assurances that are required by your agency head. That's like a 30-page document. Believe it or not, one day I actually read it. And there's a lot of information in there that perhaps we will take for granted that your agency head will sign. As we mentioned last time when we launched our application, the signature statement that your agency has now signed added some interesting comments, added an additional statement, and that statement referenced falsifying fraudulent information or submitting non-factual information and how you are subject to criminal and administrative penalties for submitting information that is false or claiming information that is false. Now, as we all know, that as your agency head sign your applications, they're signing them based on what deans, directors, and or program designers have written and submitted on their behalf. So I caution you to be mindful of the information that you submit to us, because, again, those written documents are what we are using as our virtual view of your program. If I'll circle back to the budget page, and I'm looking at the, again, post-secondary request for application, page 31. I cannot emphasize this enough, that as you're looking at the budget page and you see the salary, we are explaining the position type, how that position, if it's administrative or not, and how that position ties back to our performance measures. And notice how we are identifying the benefit right beneath that salary position. So that's important to do. We did that purposefully. If you are including the percentage, and again, when you write down the retirement and Social Security and you include the percentage, please make sure that the calculation of that 9.85 in this example calculates and adds accurately, because our program managers go behind us and do the calculation. And many times you've written 9.5%, but in the column 5, you've actually listed 7.3%. So we need to make sure that if you're going to provide that, that the calculation is correct. Materials and supplies, please delineate those supplies that are necessary for our students and consumables that our students will be using or your students will be using as compared to supplies and expenditures that perhaps our administrators will use. In regards to travel out of state, out of county, emphasize that if it is an out-of-county travel, for in this example, two CTE teachers to attend the FACTE conference. We actually had a question regarding that. And again, let me explain how this works. You're going to submit your application on or before June 30th. Therefore, you will have a budget period of July 1, 2016 through June 30th, 2017, which means any activity that falls after July 1, 2016 are allowable. Again, that's if you get your application in at the June 30th or before time frame. So hopefully that clarified the question. Hopefully that clarified the question that we quickly responded to you stating it is okay to include the FACSE conference, but that is contingent on when you submit your application and whether your application meets the July 1 time frame. Also, one of the things we'd like to caution you with, whole numbers. If you see in column 5 here in the example, we say whole numbers. Please do not include cents. Again, and consider rounding. Please do not apply for more than your allocation indicates on the allocation chart, because then we have to contact you and ask you where to cut. And again, running those calculation tapes, we have to do that. When you look at when you're buying computer hardware and those kinds of things, we've provided a good example here. And again, you're going to attach the equipment form. So we're sitting there matching your budget as it relates to the equipment form. And you will be surprised that we have indications on the budget that you're going to buy a particular item that's $1,000 or more that requires the form, but when we get to the form, that item is not listed. So we ask you to be reminded of that as well. Now, I like this part because I have some awesome news, some good news. In our last Chancellor bi-monthly call, I mentioned this, but I'd like to mention it again and confirm that our anticipated federal award from the U.S. Department of Education is greater than what we anticipated. And again, it is our desire to give as much of the dollars out to the locals, which means roughly we're getting about almost $1 million more in the 16-17 year. So we have gone through and recalculated your allocation. And in every situation, each of our providers will be receiving additional dollars beyond what is currently posted. We will be posting a revised allocation chart in the next few weeks. And the reason I'm saying next few weeks, we must get the allocation chart, the revised allocation chart approved by senior management. And I thought we would have that approved by or before our conference call today. But we've already submitted the information to senior management. I'm waiting for the final approval. With that said, you will be happy to know that you're getting more money. What our intent is to fund all of our 16-17 applications with the increased allocation. In the event that we get an application that does not reflect the increase, we're probably going to drop it in supplies. We're going to find a place, we're going to drop it, and keep the application moving. But there are some providers, again, based on your proportionate share, that in some cases getting $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 more than what you were originally given. So I think it's substantial dollars that we're excited to roll out. So as soon as I can get that green light from senior management, you will find a new posting. How will you know that the new allocation has been posted? We will send a memo from the Chancellor informing you that the revised allocations are available and attach the revised allocation. Let's say you've already submitted your application. Don't worry. We will still be working with you and just ask you to send us a new budget page. We'll mark through. We're not asking you to submit the thing all over again. We will make the necessary modifications along with you. So kudos to those that have already submitted their application. And believe it or not, I do have some in my office that they've already submitted. So we'll be working with you to make sure that when we issue the award in the July, that it will include the increased allocation amount. At this time, we're going to open up for questions. We're going to get some assistance here to take the phone off for conference mode and allow you to ask questions.
Question mode is now disabled.
All right. Conference mode is disabled. I'm going to open questions before we go to Marcy talking about the online survey. Actually, I'm going to let Marcy go.
Okay. Thanks, Gloria. I'm Marcy Sigg, Director of Grants Administration, and we just wanted you to know that your feedback regarding this webinar is very important to us. We encourage everyone to take a few moments and complete the brief survey that you can access from your PowerPoint slide. The link is there on your screen. We do look at all of these, and this does help us prepare for our future webinars and what information we should be putting in our future webinars. So thank you for your time, and now I'm going to turn it over to Gloria and Amy for some more questions.
I'm trying to look at some of the email questions as well as answer any of your audio questions. I'm going to start with your audio questions. If you have any audio questions, please speak at this time. You can give me your name, agency, and ask the question.
Hi, this is Mary Rhodes at Daytona State College. I have a question about general assurances.
Yes.
Is the document that we need to use for signature on your website currently?
Yes. That's a link.
Yes. Okay. And showing on for the need to be included with the application.
I do apologize that we have some disturbance in the background, so I only heard a portion of your question. Will you please repeat it?
Okay. You answered the first part. The second part was we don't see the general assurance on the checklist.
For the checklist.
Okay.
If your agency has a change, yes, it is a required document to submit it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, hopefully we've covered some of the questions that we received via email. Let's see. On the St. John question, Angela, if you will call me offline, I'd like to speak with you directly regarding that. Angela,
okay.
My phone number,
850-245-9053. Okay.
And we are working on that, and thank you for submitting that. We, matter of fact, was working on that today, but please call me offline.
I will. That is it, then.
We are trying to cover all of the questions. I think we have responded to the majority of them. Luke, if the application is submitted before June 30th, did I hear correctly that purchasing can take place as of July 1?
Yeah.
If your application is submitted on or before June 30th, you must wait till you have an official award letter in hand. that official award letter will give you a program and budget period of July 1. So the response to your question, I would not proceed with any expenditures until I am assured that I have an award letter in hand. But if you meet the requirement, it will allow you July 1, 2016, June 30th. Hopefully that answers your question.
This is Amy. I'm going to respond to Jessica Williams' question about performance data and targets being available prior to May 1st. I certainly hope so. We are currently at the mercy of the U.S. DOE. They have a target.
Working as quickly as we can here to get the target.
Absolutely. This is Victoria speaking. Again, I mentioned how there are multiple parts moving throughout the approval process, but ultimately all these parts will meet and join together for the final submission. So move forward with submitting your budget narrative and all of your written narrative components at such time that under separate cover, we begin the local negotiation of the performance, that will be a part. One thing, we cannot issue the award letter without this component. So be assured that it is important and we will process it as soon as possible. If we do not have any further questions, I think we have addressed all of our written questions through the webinar. Again, I want to thank you all for participating. If you have any questions, feel free to give me a call or your program manager. Thank you and have a wonderful day.